Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we are speaking with Rose Penelope Yee, who is a congressional candidate in California's newly redrawn 2nd District. Rose is chair of the Shasta County Democratic Central Committee and a longtime advocate for healthcare, housing, climate justice, and peace. She was also the endorsed candidate of the California Democratic Party in the 2024 congressional race in District 1 in California. She supports Medicare for All, affordable housing, climate resilience, and an end to U.S. funding for endless war. The website is roseforcongress.com. Rose Penelope Yee, welcome to Talk World Radio.
Thank you so much, David, and thank you to the listeners and to the viewers for joining us today.
Thanks for being on. I know you're very busy with the campaign. Where is California's new 2nd District?
So the new 2nd District, as it's reconfigured, actually, as my husband terms it, it's like the head of an elephant, where you have the head with Shasta County, where I'm from, and then going up to Siskiyou, going up to Modoc, and it's the California-Oregon border. Then it goes across the state to the coastal area of Trinity, Del Norte, Humboldt, and then there's a narrow strip all the way along the coast in Mendocino, and then it joins Marin County, which is, probably the bulk of the Democratic votes are in Marin County. So that is the new 2nd District.
And this is a very new district drawn to be guaranteed to a Democrat. And so the only question then is what kind of Democrat? Is that right?
That's correct. So prior to Proposition 50, Shasta County, where I live in, used to be part of CD1. And in response to the Texas gerrymandering, Prop 50 was passed. And so the makeup of the current district is now more Democratic leaning. And I would say it's a lighter blue now, as opposed to Shasta County, where we were before, was a deep red county.
And so who else is running, and how would you behave differently from them if elected?
So right now we have, with the newly reformed District 2, we have a Democratic incumbent. And that Democratic incumbent is a career politician. He has served in the California Assembly. And then in 2012, he was elected to Congress. And so he has served 6 terms in Congress. So he's what I would call a career politician. And when the district was reconfigured, I started listening to voters in his current district, and just to hear what they think of their representative. Because here in Shasta County, we have been represented by a MAGA Republican incumbent who, together with Rep. Hoffman of District 2, is also a career politician. They actually both served together in the California Assembly, and they both got voted to Congress together. And so they have had, parallel career paths, except that they both belong to different parties. And so I was interested in learning more, because then with the new reconfiguration, I would be represented by a Democrat, right? And so I wanted to get more information about who this person is who's going to represent me.
Yeah. And then this is Jared Huffman, who is an incumbent, but he's an incumbent for only part of the new district, right?
Correct. And the challenge, David, is that the California Democratic Party has rules in terms of endorsements. And endorsements of the party are very, very important. So as you mentioned earlier, I was the endorsed candidate for District 1 in the last congressional cycle. And what that means is that for Democrats who are not who we call low propensity voters. They're not as tuned in to the nuances of candidate platforms. They will look at the D in your name, and they would look at who is endorsed by the party, and they will vote for that person. And so when it comes to getting the votes of those voters, it is really important to get that endorsement. And what happens is that now with District 2, because Huffman is the incumbent, he automatically gets put into what is called the consent calendar, which means that he is going to be the endorsed candidate. There is a process of preventing him from being auto-included, but it is a very steep hill to climb. It is, as you can imagine, kind of like I can parallel it maybe to like Senate, where we have the filibuster, where you have to have that really high level. It's a really high barrier to entry, which is almost impossible to get. And so what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to reach out to all of the delegates, voting delegates in CD2, to make it be fair and to sign on a petition, which is the deadline is on the 7th, 12 noon Pacific, to send in that petition to not automatically endorse Rep. Huffman. Because it needs to be fair, it needs to be democratic, and the Democratic Party needs to abide by its principles of fairness, of equality, of making every voice heard.
It sounds like you're at a construction site, by the way. I guess that's the nature of a campaign office. What would you do differently in the United States Congress from what Jared Huffman does and would do?
So my campaign, David, is rooted in three pillars, and that is people, peace, and planet. We cannot serve people without peace. We cannot have our planet be sustainable and viable for generations to come without peace. And so peace is a central core to my campaign, and that is what is the main differentiator for me. So for example, in 2024, there was a bill called the Israel Supplemental Appropriations Bill that I saw you nod your head. So you know about it. Yes. So essentially, it allocated an additional $26 billion of military funding to Israel. And Rep. Huffman, when I looked under the hood again, we need to look at what our representatives' votes are. It is not enough to listen to what they say. We need to look at the record. And so when I looked at the record, I saw that he voted for that bill. La Malfa, the MAGA Republican incumbent in District 1, also voted for that bill. And so you have, again, these two career politicians, one Democrat, one Republican, who had that parallel career track in politics, vote together, vote the same way in funding military arms to Israel. And what it does, David, and I'm sure your listeners know this, is that any funding, any resources that we have that our country has that goes to the military are resources that are taken away from people. It's resources that are taken away from healthcare. It's resources that are taken away from housing. It's resources that's taken away from fighting climate emergencies and making and us having infrastructure, putting together infrastructure for our districts that help with climate resiliency.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, about 60% of federal discretionary spending goes into wars and militarism, and the other 40% goes to everything else, these little slivers of the budget pie for each other department and project. If it were up to you, what would the federal budget look like? What would a budget proposal, what would the pie look like? What percentage would be going to wars and militarism and what to other things?
Well, the first thing that we need to do is we need to have a really independent and accurate audit of the Pentagon budget, right? So that we will know how much he goes to the subcontractors, the military subcontractors, how much is really spent on our men and women who, you know, risk their lives for our country and need to be taken care of. Because that's the thing, we need to differentiate between taking care of our military men and women and the money that goes to enrich war profiteers and the subcontractors, and then have a real look at what is needed in terms of defense. It is, to me, inconceivable that the United States spends, I believe at the latest count, it says that our military budget is more than the other 10 countries after us in terms of military spending. And so to your question of how it would look like, my ideal of how it would look like is that defense should be a sliver of the budget and public goods and services should be on top of it. Like, our government, I believe, has a moral contract to us, its citizens, taxpaying citizens, to serve us. And what would serving us mean? It means that we would have a big part of our budget towards healthcare, because healthcare is our right as American citizens. We should have housing, because housing is our right. And so think about how much better our communities would be, how much richer our communities would be, how much more, I would say, delightful, even joyful interactions there are in communities where we know that our government is looking after us, where we know that we don't have insecurity, housing insecurity, when we know that if we get sick, we will not get bankrupt, but that we will get affordable quality care, that we can go to a hospital without having to pay like a huge bill or without having to be asked what your insurance is. So those are the things that is why I'm running. That is what I want a representative to work for. And that is what I'm going to work for.
We're speaking with Rose Penelope Yee, who is candidate for Congress in the 2nd District of California, and the website is roseforcongress.com. Rose, for many years, we've had some Congress members who make nice statements right after military spending bills pass, opposing them, or who support legislation that would supposedly reduce military spending by some set amount. But never, ever do they organize a caucus to try to actually block a military spending bill unless the amount is reduced. Would you be willing to do that if you were in Congress?
Well, David, I love that idea. This is the first time somebody has brought it up. And I know we have the Progressive Caucus, but as you know, probably a good number of those in the Progressive Caucus voted, like Huffman did, for the 2024 Israel Supplemental Appropriations Act. I would be one of those members that would be first to sign on and join a caucus like that. And I would be happy to organize a caucus like that. What? Because there is strength in numbers, and we need to make sure that we identify like-minded Congress people. Pretty much like what we have with Medicare for All, right? That we have a group of Congress people that are that have advocated and are strongly supportive and will vote for a universal healthcare system, and we need to have a similar caucus. I love that idea, David.
That is so exciting.
I'll join and I'll help organize it.
I want to ask another question. I think I know the answer, but should Congress stop the war on Venezuela? Should it cut off the funds for the war on Venezuela? Should it impeach the current president of the United States for bombing another country and kidnapping its president?
Well, David, I'll be more than happy to share my statement on the kidnapping of Venezuelan President Maduro by the Trump war machine. And exactly states what you have just mentioned. It calls for the impeachment of Trump, but I think we should go further than that. We should also impeach Marco Rubio, Secretary of State. We should also impeach Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, as he's called now. And I would say that we need to return the president of Venezuela and his wife back to where they are with deep apologies, and that Congress should be the one to take a stand and really get that mechanism going. Congress is really the branch of government that is authorized to wage war on behalf of the country, and this was not authorized by Congress. And so, Hakeem Jeffries, as a leader of the House of Representatives, needs to go out there and fight for it. And the thing is, I haven't really heard much from him about this. I mean, separate Congress people, they send their press releases much like I did as a candidate. I sent out one, but I'm not seeing like Jeffries call for a press conference. Have you talking about the fact that he, as the minority leader, needs to start this movement to impeach Trump? What I actually heard last night was Rep. Thomas Massie, who is a Republican, talk about the War Powers Resolution and that Congress should implement and be forceful about implementing the War Powers Resolution.
Yep, I think you are right.
Have you heard anything at all from
Only thing I've seen
Jeffries?
from Jeffries was a very brief statement, and a big part of it was that he didn't accept Maduro as the legitimate president, which I think is sort of off topic. Whatever you think of some other country's
Yes.
president, good or bad, you can't go bomb the country and kidnap the guy, you know?
Exactly. And what it is, what they're doing there, David, is muddying the waters, right? They're trying to kind of like say that this is somewhat justified by saying that this person is like this, trying to avoid the core of the issue. And this is where I think it would be helpful when we look at politicians and what they say, because you had asked earlier, how do we differentiate politicians when they say things that we like to hear, but then they don't do things, when they don't vote according to what they say. I think one thing, what one measure by which we can tell if an elected official is muddying the waters, if they make it sound complicated, they do the what if it's like this, what if, or because of this. And instead of focusing on the core issue, they do all of these things. They try to cover it up. It's like if I love watching like cooking shows, and pretty much when you watch a cooking show or like Top Chef, for example, I'm a big fan. When a contestant chef brings out a dish that is simple, the judges actually praise them for it, because when it's a simple dish, it is very hard to hide anything behind it. A simple dish presents the essence of what it is that you want to say and what you stand for. And so that is one way that we can look at politicians. Are they simplifying what is the issue at hand to its core, instead of obfuscating it and wrapping it in so many layers that it is easy for the voter to get distracted and to think otherwise? Does that make sense, David, about like hitting the core?
I agree very, very much. I watched on January 1st the inauguration as mayor of New York of Zoran Mamdani, and I noticed this predictable chant from the crowd, very, very simple and straightforward. I think for a super mega popular policy, which was tax the rich. Tax the rich. What's your position on wealth inequality in the United States, and what, if anything, would you do about it?
It is totally inconceivable, David, that a country as rich as ours have so much people living in the streets, people in tent cities, and these are working families. So, just as in an illustration, before we moved to Shasta County, we lived in Oakland. That's the San Francisco Bay Area for your listeners. And we left in 2014. When we left, Oakland had a good number of homeless people. And then 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, when we drive through like a West Oakland BART station, we saw tent cities starting cropping up. And now, 11 years later, it is even worse. There's just so many more. So what's happening, it's not just the inequality between union labor wages and CEO pay. It's also the inequality between like the regular working people who cannot afford to live in the cities where they work in. And so when we were also in Oakland, my husband and I were both served on the board of the Salvation Army, and they had a building that housed working families for a temporary amount of time, like 3 to 6 months. And you have families there who are in one unit, so you have a mother, father, and like two, three, four, five kids. And these parents are not people who don't work. They work 2 or 3 jobs, and yet they still need that help because they cannot afford to live in Oakland. They cannot afford to pay for an apartment. And so my stance on that wealth inequality is billionaires should pay their share. And why do we even have billionaires in the first place, right? And so we need to have mechanisms by which we start to get them to pay their share of the tax burden that will help elevate the rest of our people and provide for public goods and services that we sorely need. And so part of taxing the rich, I'm a business person. I am a co-founder of a financial firm, and so I do have some measure of working knowledge of how finances work. And so the first thing is we need to look at various mechanisms by which we can really tax the wealth, because the wealthy have various ways of hiding their wealth. Like when we hear, for example, I'm sure your listeners have heard about Steve Jobs getting zero wages from Apple, or I think for a while, Elon Musk was also saying he wasn't getting paid by Tesla. But when you look at his actual pay package, it's huge. It's in billions. And just lately, if your listeners haven't heard of it, the Tesla board granted Elon Musk a pay package of like $1 trillion. So I cannot imagine like $1 trillion in wealth. Just to give an illustration for our listeners, it just to hit that $1 billion in wealth, you need to have a net worth of 500 million. Okay, let me rephrase this. Okay, if you have a net worth of less than 500 million, you are closer to that homeless person who lives in a tent city in Oakland than to a billionaire. You know that, right? Because 500 million is the cutoff point between 0 and 1 billion. And so, for all of our listeners who have less than 500 million in assets, we're all closer to that homeless person living in a tent city in Oakland than to the billionaires. And so, we need to do everything that we can. As a congressperson, I will work at looking at the mechanisms that will tax the billionaires so that we can lessen the inequality gap. And I can talk more, and I would love to return and where we can talk more about this. I know we have a time limit.
Well, we do have about 3 minutes left, and then we are out of minutes. Rose Penelope Yee, if military spending were reduced, which is $1 trillion and more every single year after year after year, and if trillionaires and billionaires and corporations were appropriately taxed, what would be your priorities? I know you've said Medicare for all, but would a Green New Deal be on the list? Where do you want to spend this money?
So we'll spend it on people and planet, David. So Medicare for all, like you mentioned, housing affordability and climate resilience projects that would improve, you know, our infrastructure in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our cities. We when we have peace, we don't spend our resources on things that do not benefit our communities. And so it will go to people, it will go to planet. And one thing that I would love to talk about as a first step that will actually put money into people's pockets is, why don't we have a peace dividend? So I did like back of the envelope calculations, David, and you know, Thanksgiving and the holidays are really good times to have extra money. If we give each of our each American, each adult American, $500 at Thanksgiving as a thank you for being a law-abiding citizen and a taxpayer, and we give $250 to each child, my back of the envelope calculations is that it comes out to around $150 billion. So we take that money from the military. I mean, that's just like the increase. That's just the equivalent of an increase, I think, in the last couple of years in the military budget, right? So instead of increasing the military budget, we put that money into the pocket of regular Americans. You know what it would do? That Americans will receive that money, like so a family of four, two parents and a kid, can easily get $1,500. They spend it on Christmas gifts or Hanukkah gifts or Kwanzaa gifts, and they spend it within their communities. And so that creates economic opportunity, that creates economic activity in the communities that they're in. And there's immediate feedback there's immediate economic feedback loop. So that's just one of the things that I am hoping to bring to Congress, innovative ways to serve our people and make sure that our planet is sustainable for our children, grandchildren, and seven generations on.
I very much hope that you are in Congress soon. The website is roseforcongress.com. We've been speaking with Rose Penelope Yee. I encourage you to check out her website and get in touch and support what she's doing. Rose, thank you very, very much for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thank you so much, David, and thank you to the listeners.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.